Linda von Tolberg for BizNews. Well, the current Labour government in the United Kingdom has also, like the previous one, pledged to reduce net migration. And several key changes are set to take effect this year, affecting those looking to work or settle in the United Kingdom. Well, joining us today is J.P. Breitenbach from Breitenbach Immigration Consultants to help us understand these developments and how it affects South African. Hi, J.P., thanks for joining us.
Hello, Linda. Glad to be here. Thank you.
Well, could you give us sort of an overview of the changes in the UK immigration rules?
So it's more really a directional shift than concrete changes thus far. So we've seen that Labour, yes, they've pledged to limit migration, reduce that migration. But I think there's also a slightly, there's realism that does come into play and also slightly more clarity of thought. To illustrate, you know, one of the things they did quite early on when they took power was to stop the further increase in the minimum income requirement for spouse visas or settlement visas to 29,000. So that is the first step of what the Tories wanted to do. And then they wanted to increase that all the way to almost £40,000 for single applicants. So Labour's now stopped at 29,000. It's just more realistic and a little bit more open-minded, the approach they've taken thus far.
So which of these changes will have the most impact? I see there's now an increase in visa costs that will come into effect very soon.
So the increase in visa costs has always been there, right? So as inflation goes on, visa costs increase. That for a long time, there wasn't really an increase, especially around COVID. So even though it's really expensive, it's not unexpected that the cost will increase. Of course, it is a way to limit migration if you make it unaffordable. But it is important to know that, you know, when a door is seemingly closed, the window might be open, you know. So there are things like fee waivers that one can apply for if one is destitute. So there are other options, but yes, they do tend to increase the costs annually.
So what will it be now? It was, you know, because some South Africans might not have done research on it yet.
Depends which category that we are talking about. So the main cost really is the National Health Surcharge or the Immigration Health Surcharge. So that's where you pay in advance to be able to use the National Health Service. It's still cheaper than some medical aids in South Africa, but it's a forced payment you have to make. And that is the more expensive part rather than the Home Office fee itself. So for an ancestral visa, for example, it's a five-year visa. You have to pay that IHS fee in advance. You're looking at over £5,000 just for that. So the visa fee of £500, whatever it is these days, really pales in comparison. But then one does have access to the National Health Service. So is it fair? The clients need to decide for themselves.
Well, I also see that one of the visas, because when you're in the UK, you often find care workers here. I see these new rules about their spouses or their partners.
So this is a very interesting scenario, what happened there. So Brexit might not have been the most well thought out event that ever happened. But one of the repercussions were that a lot of the care workers who were traditionally Europeans, you know, you'd go to the UK, you'd do caring for a season and then you'd leave. But there were carers around. Post-Brexit, those same individuals couldn't just go to the UK as EU citizens and do care work. And of course, for many, many years, and we see this throughout UK labour market, enough UK citizens simply weren't trained because the Europeans were there to do various aspects of work. So post-Brexit, there was a massive shortage of care workers. Sure. The UK then made it much easier for care workers to go to the UK and to take their families. Then the most recent thing that the UK said is, well, that's great, but you can't take your families anymore. You still can in certain circumstances, but as a general, we can't. Of course, that will have the effect of reducing that migration, but at the same time, it will have the effect of reducing available care workers, which the UK will need more and more of as time goes by and the populace ages.
So can we look at what routes are still open for South Africans?
So there are numerous routes available. So the usual suspects, you know, a lot of South Africans will have ancestry from the UK. There's been massive changes in 2022 to nationality legislation, where many South Africans who couldn't, or Southern Africans, who previously couldn't obtain British citizenship can now do so. sometimes it passed to their children. So that's quite an exciting development. And the ancestral visa are still available. If you're a British-born grandparent, you're a Commonwealth citizen, you can still obtain that. Then I suppose one could split the other categories really into more of a business category, so where you want to open up a business in the UK, or where there's a business who want to employ you as a skilled worker, that is still relatively available. I wouldn't say it's simple, but it's very doable. Also, if you're an innovative business person and you want to go and open up a business in an innovative, scalable field, then that's definitely open to you. Or, of course, if you are very talented, the global talent, we do a lot of those for South Africans. South Africans tend to be very talented, as we've seen in the sport fields recently. So, you know, there's a lot of talent in South Africa, a lot of global talent. Interestingly, the majority of those folks go to the UK for a while and then return to South Africa and sort of live in both countries is an interesting phenomenon. And then separate to that, you, of course, have the dependency visas, you know, if your husband was British or whatever the case might be, and a lot of students as well. A lot of South Africans sending their children to do their tertiary education in the UK. And the UK has got some benefits to that. So if you do a bachelor's degree, for example, the UK allows you to stay for longer thereafter in order to find full-time employment, really. Because, of course, from the UK point of view, it's quite nice, isn't it? You know, you've got somebody who paid to be educated in your country, and they are skilled, they're already sort of aware of the labor market in the UK. They're sent to work for a company, and that company then potentially sponsors them as a skilled worker. So there's still a whole bunch of options available. It just takes a bit more planning maybe than it used to in the past to be successful in that application.
And tell us about this innovator founder visa.
Very interesting. So the idea behind it is that you have a foreign entrepreneur, so let's say South African in this scenario, who have a scalable, innovative business idea. And that person will then approach us or somebody like us, and we will then assist them to obtain an endorsement, really, from an innovative endorsement body. So there's a few of them, and what they do is they work with us and the client to have a look at their business proposal. And if they feel that this business proposal is innovative and scalable, then they will endorse them. The client then goes to the UK and, of course, then has to implement that business plan. There's been changes there where the applicant can work in a second sort of employment until their business is up and running. It's quite flexible. It's a very exciting route and very interesting businesses that people come up with.
Well, what have you found? Have many South Africans tried this?
Yes. One example that springs to mind is a client of ours who invented a new way of making a sausage, believe it or not, where you can make a sausage where, for example, you can have the meat on the outside, we can have mash on the inside, and mass produce that at scale. And of course, then you have your bangers and mash, don't you, in one product. And that particular client got the endorsement and is doing really well in the UK at the moment.
So did he start it first in South Africa or did he start the whole business in the UK?
In South Africa first. It was more proof of product, really. But yes, it was an established business and then we did the innovator. This is in contrast to, for example, a business that would have been in existence for a while. He simply wants to expand to the UK. And then we would effectively assist a business in opening up an office in the UK and sending over key workers who will then build a business on behalf of the parent company. That's the expansion worker. That's also quite popular.
I see that there's some changes to the EU settlement scheme. Does that affect South Africans in any way?
Very few. The majority of South Africans would already have left, with EU citizens would already have had to leave prior to Brexit, of course, in order to take any form of benefit. So it does, but not really for what's known as entry clearance applications, so new entrants into the UK. But of course, there are many South Africans, dual nationals of EU countries already in the UK, and they will be affected by that, yes, but not negatively so.
So, Shapi, do you find that the UK is still the preferred destination for South Africans who want to live or work overseas or settle there?
So bear in mind, I'm an English solicitor, so we only do the UK, but it's as popular as ever. I think the profile of migrant might have changed over the years. There's a lot more business migration where businesses want to expand into the UK, maybe get a foothold with an eye on Europe. or the US thereafter. It's much closer. So we see a lot of that. I think a lot of South African businesses sort of feel they might have reached the ceiling in South Africa, or tech businesses might feel that the South African market isn't quite ready for their product, whereas the European market might be. So there's a lot of that, and the nationality that I mentioned that changed. So interestingly, with those, many more South Africans can get British citizenship, but they don't necessarily go to Britain. You know, it's just good to have in case they want to go, or of course, for travel purposes, not having to get visas, which is always a pain. So the UK is still very popular, you know, for all the normal reasons. I think culturally, it's easy to fit in. There's no real time difference, not that far away from family. You know, it's an overnight flight and you're back with your family if you need to be. So no, it's still incredibly popular. And I think it'll only be on the increase, really, as far as countries to go to is concerned. A lot of the other traditional countries people originally went to, like the US, I see many people don't. They're just sort of looking and seeing what happens there. Whereas I think with the UK, it'll always remain popular.
So if we look at occupations, because many of the young people I meet are in the UK are in, they are accountants. Or, you know, so which is so interesting. So what are the professions that are sort of more acceptable when you're trying to immigrate to the UK?
So the accountants is an interesting one, because, of course, there are many accountants who would be working for BDO or PwC or whatever, who will then get transferred to the UK, to their offices in the UK. So that's always been a very popular route. But in terms of occupations, to an extent, it depends on time to time. So there's this body called the Migration Advisory Committee of the UK that advises the government on where they have a shortage in the labor market. And then when the government attempts to address those shortages, they will bring out the shortage occupation list or things like that, where they will say, well, specifically at this moment, we need X type of employee to work for UK business. So that's always changing. It's worth checking them out on a relatively frequent basis. But all the professions still, and a lot of the sort of traditional, you know, plumbers, there's a lot of plumbing work. You know, I think the way to think of it is that the type of roles Europeans used to fill that British citizens didn't necessarily fill, which has caused now a bit of a delay in that skill set being developed, which will I suppose be caught up by local British citizens over time. But anything really like that, electricians, you know, anything like that, there's quite a lot of people still going.
And I see a surprising one is there seem to be a tightening of visa rules for engineers and IT workers. Also, the whole idea is to promote homegrown talent.
Yes, and we'll see how that works out. I think it's important to note that these things are very much cyclical. Bear in mind, for example, IT workers, a lot of that work can be offshored, right? So a lot of that is just cheaper. It's simpler. So UK businesses might need fewer people working for them in the UK. Of course, it kind of defeats the government's object because those roles aren't being filled in the UK. And engineers, well, it always comes and goes, you know, depending on what the labor market needs. But there's always room at the top, if that makes sense. You know, if somebody's particularly skilled as an engineer, if somebody's particularly skilled as an IT boffin, they should really be okay. It just takes a bit of time and patience, which South Africans aren't necessarily known for, of course, to find the right position and to take benefit of the routes available.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Just one thing I think that the listeners might find useful. The government's introducing the e-visa system, and that is for everybody. And that is really from the end of this year, 31 December. So many migrants will have these biometric residence permit cards that will be expiring at the end of this year. It doesn't mean that they leave, so their visa itself that's underlying their permission to be in the UK lapses. But they do need to please attend to the e-visa scheme so that they can create an account with the UKVI and sort of get that sorted. Because afterwards, after the 31st of December, to travel would, of course, be difficult because even though you might have legal status, your BRP would have expired. So how are you going to prove that? And in the industry, a lot of us are concerned about this because we can sort of see a bit of a a time crunch for people who don't do this in advance, trying to quickly do it, you know, on the 28th of December because they want to leave and go do the new year somewhere else. So maybe it's just worth everybody looking into that and making sure that they can get that sorted one in time. If they struggle, as always, they can just contact us and we'd be happy to help.